and you will atone.
Oh, yeah, who's your daddy? Who's your dad? Oh, shoot.
This is arrived, and other people have remembered, and they come back to us and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just arrived.
The truth shall set you free, but first, it will piss you off. Naughty by Nature, with Nature Boy. Interesting people, with interesting ideas, for an interesting conversation. Times of Revelation. This is a question which has been pondered for centuries, but never has a technology existed to fulfill the Bible prophecies until now. For example, the Bible references the mark of the beast and says no one shall be able to buy or sell without it, and that it will be biologically imprinted or implanted into our bodies. Now, with the advent of implantable devices, think of Neuralink. The use of nanotechnology along with the future implementation of the CBDCs. The mark of the beast is not only possible, it's plausible. I can think of no better person to discuss this with than today's guest. His vast experience of traveling and living in many parts of the world has reflected in his wisdom and knowledge of how the world really works. His many years of journalism and broadcasting have given him a sharp, keen eye on global events. Mix into that a strong Christian belief, and you have a man whose wisdom needs to be heard. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, Mr. Havori Morick. So, Havori, how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. Can't complain.
Yeah, neither can I. So how's life treating you down there in Guadalajara?
In narco territory. Good, you know, sunny day. Haven't been kidnapped yet or decapitated. So again, can't complain. Life is good.
Yeah, no sicarios have come and knocked on your door lately. So yeah, I guess you're all right, man, when it comes to that. All right. So I was listening to an interview recently you had with Lieutenant Colonel Colzer, I believe, and I discovered that we have something in common, and that is an interest in the New World Order and globalism and trying to get the word out to people about what it is and what it has in store for us. So I know that's a very wide subject. And I just want to start off with the viewers so everybody can get an idea of what your view is on globalism, the globalists, the New World Order, and what the plans are they have for us.
Yeah, you know, my approach has always been that my first sort of thing is more trying to understand. Like for me, it's fun just trying to understand and observe and analyze what's happening, and that's like the first thing, and not as much as the waking up part, but you know that as well. And so I've got a biblical worldview. So, you know, in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, you know, I started reading the Bible, became a Christian, and then sort of put the two worlds together, right? The Bible and history and politics and international relations, which is what I studied and taught. And basically, I kind of view it as the prophecy implies that we're progressively going to move towards a global government that's going to be totalitarian and basically a lot of what we're seeing already, and those are some of my main focuses are, you know, geopolitics and empire, which is for me synonymous with world empire, world government, global government, the world state, world federation, and so I think all roads point to that. They're constructing this global system where all nations will be subject to it, and they're trying to create this digital infrastructure that's going to force us to do the will of those running the system. And it just you know, it seems like that's what's going on right now. You got the technocracy, you've got them putting us into these regional unions, so getting rid of national sovereignty and putting us into regional unions blocks, and that's sort of the short version of it.
Well, it sounds like we both kind of woke up doing the same thing. I basically found out about it when I first became a Christian in the 80s, in 85, and I think it was 83. I'm dating myself. But I remember reading Revelations and the prophecies because I was really fascinated with it. And in it, it talked about world government. And then I looked around the world at the time, even as a teenager, and I was like, yeah, I can see this happening. So I started learning more and more about it. And I can remember in the 80s when it's, okay, it's time for me to start telling people about this. Let's get them warned, you know. And literally, I would get laughed out of the room every time. I would have remarks like, this America, boy, that ain't never going to happen, this country, son. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm reading books. I'm seeing documents of the World Parliament Federation. And I'm seeing the people who sign it. And these are very powerful people. You know, one of them that I remember was Jesse Jackson from the Rainbow Coalition. Yes, sirree. And Mr. Oliver Stone, which I found very interesting. So I'm like you. I started learning about it. And then I was reading books. And back then, I would occasionally get a videotape or a cassette tape, because this is way pre-internet, of like a Bill Cooper or a talk. So I'm learning about it and I'm seeing it form. It's as if my eyes are starting to wake up. The fog is starting to get lifted, and I'm seeing it everywhere. Well, I shouldn't say everywhere. I guess that's being a little bit hyperbolic, but I can see it and I'm aware of it. And it made me, of why something so obvious to me that I could see everywhere is so oblivious to others. Now, when you first started waking up, let's just lack of a better term, and you started telling people about it, did you have a similar experience, or what was yours like?
Yeah, I think it's similar for most of us. People poo-poo you for various reasons. Others, they think it's just it's unfathomable, right? They think it's crazy. You're crazy, you wacky. And I think other people that, you know, maybe they don't care as much about it. And, you know, they're willing to entertain it and maybe they even accept it, but they're just more focused on carnal things, you know, work, pleasure, having fun, drinking, sports, entertainment, right? Pleasure. And others maybe are in a more difficult situation where they just can't, they have to think of the daily grind, their economy, and they just don't have time to think about these things. And I have seen over the past 20 years, a few people in my life who initially were on that extreme. Now they slowly, you know, they may not come up to me and say, yeah, you were right. Although some people have, but others that just kind of like quietly, you can see that they get it now, and how a lot of these things are really affecting our lives, right? A lot of these things, from COVID stuff to how the government, all the different policies governments are implementing, and the corporations that are dictating the way we live our lives. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think COVID was a big eye-opener for a lot of people. I mean, there's a lot of people that their eyes are still shut, and they actually shut a little bit more, but there's a lot of people that woke up. I have a similar experience, with a good friend of mine. And over the last few years, I'm starting to see his eyes open. I think one of the big things that helped him is I bought the book, The Real Anthony Fauci. And he's an avid reader. I'm not. And
got it right behind me right there.
Yeah, yeah. So I gave it to him because I started reading it and I'm thinking, the way I read, I'll have this done. Take me a year or two, right? Not a fast reader, not an avid reader, but he is. He'll blow through a book in a day. No, not one like that. Even he admitted, whoa, that's some heavy reading. But with that aside, it started opening up his eyes to what was going on with COVID and all the back behind the scene things that are actually happening that we weren't being told. And over the last couple of years, I'm starting to see his eyes open up. A recent example is that he despises Trump, right? He suffers a little bit from Trump derangement syndrome and the fact that when his name comes up, you could see him get very emotional. And he's read all the official documents, the court testimonies and all this stuff. And he's like, yeah, Trump did this, Trump did that. And I'm like, whoa, 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 hold on, homeboy. Let's step away from the character and let's look at the scenario and let's look at all of the legal and all the legal precedences that are being set that now you're having the former president be brought up on charges. Yeah, he may or may not be guilty of, but I guarantee you every president, including him, have done a lot more crimes than that. So they're persecuting him. And I'm like, now we're setting precedents. So we have to remember that the balance of power in this country shifts. So right now, the people that are ushering in these things because they hate Trump, you included, when power shifts, that same precedence will now be used against your guy. And what I see happening, or possibly could happen, is that now, as soon as the president gets elected, not only do they start planning his impeachment, they start planning his prosecution. And it's just a complete de-evolution of our political process. And I'll wrap it up with this. It still drives me crazy when you have people who can't see the forest from the trees that are ushering these things in, and they can't see down the future that they're basically braiding their own rope, tying their own knot for future persecutions. Now, am I off base? Do you see anything similar to that? Or what's your viewpoint on that?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that you said is, what really gets me is that some of these people, like your friend, and we all know a lot of them, mm-hmm. where they really get agitated by some Trump figure, you know, and I'm not a Trump fan. And it's just like, that's the 2 minutes of hate. Mm-hmm. Like they've literally been brainwashed. It's like, okay, let's use the other example of Biden. Like yeah. I'll watch Biden and it's like, I don't have that attitude. You know, like it's insane to think that you know, people have been programmed to have those 2 minutes of hate. It's like Trump, 2 minutes of hate, you know, and it's like, I don't do that with Biden. There's no politician that gets me to do those 2 minutes of hate, you know? And so I think really that's one thing that irks me is these people that we know and love that have fallen into that. And it's just like, you got to get beyond that. You know, let's look at Biden and Trump and all these world leaders. And so, yeah, what you're saying is this is, you know, classical tyranny, totalitarianism, fascism, whatever you want to call it. You know, I had an interesting, though, this is going down the rabbit hole. Alex Newman of New American, you might know of him. I had him on my podcast mm-hmm. last night, haven't posted it yet, but he said something interesting because I've talked to Donnie Darkin, who's a popular account on X. I like his theory where he says, you know, the pendulum swings. And Alex told me last night that the elites will try to hammer this the New World Order, you know, down our throats. In this overt fashion, right? As far mm-hmm. as they can, as they have been doing, right?
Right.
The 9/11, the Federal Reserves, the CBDCs, like, you know, they've been trying it. And it's like, it's hard now with that approach. And so they're seeing they're having more resistance now. And so they're going to take another route, which might be actually what Donnie Darkin posits, that you've got, you know, the occult. You know, it's like you mentioned, I actually believe there's a real entity. Satan is a real being that exists and entity, and he is manipulating the nations and putting this all together. It's not some symbolism, you know, for people who don't believe. I think it's, you know, and him and his angels are orchestrating all of this. That's why, you know, when the one Rockefeller or Rothschild dies, this plan goes on, because it's these eternal beings mm-hmm. who continue pushing this forward. And it's that mechanism, which is, it's really hard to understand. It's the most fascinating part of that mechanism of how these angels interact with the powers that be, right? That's fascinating. But you have Freemasonry, you have like channeling of demons and all this sort of stuff that they do. But going to your question, it's possible. Donnie Darkin and others posit you have this great awakening that we're seeing, where maybe Trump comes back and there's this great awakening and we seemingly start to put down the New World Order and Davos and World Economic Forum. And we slowly start to usher in sort of like this utopia where actually that is the real New World Order. You know, how are you going to deceive all these Christians who think the devil's going to come with the horns and you'll spot him a mile away? It's like, no, he's going to come looking exactly like some Jesus. You know, Russell Brand, I saw a clip of him today. He's talking about Jesus and selling this prayer app. And it's just like, that's the real, you know, Gnostic it's theosophy. I've been talking about this a lot. The alt media is pushing theosophy, Satanism itself. It's Gnosticism, theosophy, New Age, Age of Aquarius. And I think this is sort of the way we're going. So even if Trump comes back, it's not going to be what we think it is. But, you know, where we are right now, we're in the midst of a revolution, of a totalitarian revolution where they're trying to establish a one party system in the U.S. and, you know, everywhere else in the world. Look at Brazil. You know, Brazil, they're going after Bolsonaro, the Supreme Court judge, Alejandro Moraes, I think. He's like Judge Dredd. I am the law, right? He is the law. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I think that I think you brought up a very valid point about showing the right hand, but really manipulating with the left. And with Trump coming in, I'm with you. I don't trust him. Never have. I haven't liked that douchebag since he hit the scene in the 80s, and I don't trust him as far as I could throw that fat ass. So with that being said, all you hate listeners out there, I don't like the Trump. But with that being said, I can see it being set up. I really see a lot of similarities between what's happening now and I don't mean this in the wrong way. What happened in Germany in the 30s from the Weimar Republic until when Hitler came in. In the Weimar Republic, you had economic degradation. You know, it took a wheelbarrow of Deutschmarks to buy a loaf of bread. You had moral degradation. And you had all sorts of these other things, and the people were crying. We're like, save us. Do whatever you can, but we can't take this anymore. This madness is driving us crazy. So what happens? They usher in a strong man, Mr. Adolf Hitler. I will save you. I'll fix it. And at first, the son of a gun did. He turned the German economy around. He made it one of the strongest economies in the world, built up the military, and everyone was like, finally a savior. Finally. And once they bought into it and they were hook, line, and sinker, then the veil comes off, and now the evil presents itself because there's nothing you can do about it. You know, after the burning of the Reichstag and the rewriting of the laws, now absolute power exists within the Nazi Party. I'm not saying that Trump is Hitler. I'm not even making a comparison. What I am doing is I'm looking historically at the past and comparing it to future events, and I see a lot of correlations between it. And you think about it, you brought the Christians, right? Being a Christian, both of us are, it drives me nuts that you have people who are devout Christians that actually think Donald Trump was sent from God. And I just want to shake them and say, no, he was not sent from God. God has other plans. This guy is a Judas goat, and he's going to lead us down the path, has the potential of leading us down the path of hell and to a totalitarian type of government. Now, think about this. I'm going to be I'm going to be a dictator for a day. That's all I'm going to do. I'm going to get rid of all these immigrants. That's right. I'm going to take all those illegal immigrants, but I have to pass some temporary laws. So, but when I'm done with it, I'll give it back to you. How many times has society fallen for that lie? And the result is always the same. Once the power is given to the tyrant will never give that power back. Now, I got off on a little bit of a rant, but I do that sometimes.
I just want to add to what you said. You know, the Bible does say that God appoints rulers. So I do want to make the point that, you know, maybe, you know, under God's, you know, God is supervising everything. But I, to your point, like, we're not supposed to, like, idolize any of these mm-hmm. politicians. As you say, some of these people, like, think he's blessed. by God, or we should worship him. But it's funny you mention that, because there are a few very discerning Christians discussing what you're discussing now. You know, Michael O'Fallon of Sovereign Nations, Donnie Darkin. And there's a great X account, Aaron in Writing. And I just shared this today where he says, did you know that Hitler posited a 1,000-year reign of peace and justice in which the nations of the world would stream to Nuremberg, Germany, to pay homage to the Reich, which had taken over the whole earth, right? The Third Reich. And now, as just what we were talking about, this whole MAGA Christian nationalist scene, he shows a picture of this book called QAnon and 1,000 years of peace, destroying the New World Order and taking the kingdom of Christ by force. And it's just like, this is exactly what you just described of the 1930s. And this is why I'm, you know, saying I'm not a Christian nationalist. You know, Christ said, when he was talking to Pontius Pilate, he said, you know, my kingdom is not of this earth. You know, I could, you know, snap my fingers with the angels and we can overthrow the Roman Empire in an instant, but he didn't, because it's not about politics. It's the gospel message is supposed to go. You just preach it. Whoever wants to hear it, hears it, accept it or don't accept it. We're not going to, you know, make a theocracy like the Dominionists or whatever. That's not the Bible or the gospel. But this Christian national movement, Dominionist, theocratic, it's like, this is not of God, in my opinion. And so it's, you know, we have this left democratic totalitarianism right now. And so at the moment, you know, the other side would be less worse option, but we can go down that road, you know, from one extreme, we can go to the other extreme and have, you know, either way you can end up with this totalitarianism.
Well, I think you brought it's theosophy. You were talking about them preaching theosophy. One thing that Hitler followed was not Alice Bailey, but Pavlovsky. And like Elvis, which I thought was interesting. I don't know if Hitler always carried a copy of Pavlovsky's book, but I know that he was very interested in him. And to say the 1,000 years of the Reich compared to what you just said is too many points of correlation just to be a coincidence, if you ask me. I think that what's happening now has been well planned, very well planned for a long time. And according to Manly P. Hall, not Panley P. Hall, Manly P. Hall, in The Secret Destiny of America, the ushering in of the world government, the idea has existed for millennia, and the group, and I forgot the name of the group. I want to say The Process, but I know it's not The Process, because that's The Process of the Final Judgment, which is a whole other show. It has been in existence for thousands of years. And these plans, I think, are starting to manifest themselves in real time at an accelerated rate. Ultimately, I think the plans are going to fail, because these people that are trying to usher this in, like the Klaus Schwabs, the Rockefellers, the Gates, and so on, are falling for the biggest lie. And they themselves will suffer, and I mean suffer bad, when all this happens, because I think it's going to implode everything and create a situation, at least temporarily, that's my belief and my faith, of abstract hell. And they're the ones that are going to burn first, along with us. Now, hopefully we will survive. I hope that what I see in my mind's eye in about 10 years, I can look back and say, well, you were a conspiracy theorist, Nature Boy. You were crazy. How could you even think that? Because I want to keep an optimism out there. But I see potentially very, very dark times, and it's just following the Bible, the prophecies in Matthew, the prophecies in Revelations, the prophecies in Daniel are hitting time and time and time again to the point where it's one of two things. It's either the globalists are using that as a game plan, or these times we're living in now have been seen, foreseen, and foretold a long time ago. Either way, even if the globalists are using this as a game plan, which I've heard some people say, the prophecies are still coming true. They're still coming true. So what's your take on that, Mr. Havare? With the cool accent, by the way.
I think people who aren't Christians tend to argue that they're using it as a guidebook. I don't think that's the case at all. You know, I view God as outside of time, and he knows everything. And so he just, you know, he saw this is what's going to happen. So, you know, just like this is what the elites organically themselves and Satan are going to bring about. You know, it's they want control of the entire planet. Mm-hmm. It's simple. It's like, it's no surprise. It's what anyone, if you're the psychopathic elite, that's what you would do. So mm-hmm. It's not like you need a guidebook to do that. They're going to do what they need to do. It's almost like game theory. You only have a limited set of options to get to that goal of world domination. So again, you don't need to use the Bible as a guidebook. My view is that was just foretold okay, look, this is what God tells us through the Bible. This is what is going to happen. This is what they're going to do. And that's to show the power of God. So it's not a guidebook. It's just telling us what will occur. And just on your earlier point, John DeToit, he put out an interesting tweet again just 2 days ago. He says, not enough gets said about the occult side of Nazism. Everyone always focuses on the politics, left wing, right wing, wah. The Nazis sought actively demonic empowerment in Nazi inner circle with steep in ancient lore, rituals, and dark magic. And so, you know, I still get these people. You know, I'm not afraid. I talked about this with Ryan Christian, Last American Vagabond, on my podcast last week. Mm-hmm. You know, this whole anti-Semitic thing. I mean, I'm not afraid of being called that because it's provable that I'm not. But mm-hmm. The flip side, some of these people who listen to my podcast or in my podcast Telegram channel, pushing this Nazism, this white supremacy, you know, I'm sure some of them are feds. You know, we know your game. We know your tactics, feds. Okay, it's you know, it's old stuff. So definitely, I know some of you are feds in there. But maybe there are some true believers who've drunk the Kool-Aid, where they push this. They adore Hitler and Nazis, and I'm like, no, you know, my grandpa was a prisoner of the Nazis. They put him in a hole in the ground for 6 months in, you know, horrible conditions. He survived. Nazism's going to save you, please, you know? And they were a cult. I don't get some of these people who look up to that sort of thing. But I think where we are headed, it's pretty clear. I mean, it's crystal clear that We're getting close. Everyone that I talk to, you know, even people who are not Christians are saying like, yeah, the Bible is coming true. You know, I've talked to Pastor Archer Pralowski, the Canadian pastor who ran out the RCMP, the Canadian police, you know, shouting Nazis, commies, you know, he said, and Patrick Wood of Technocracy. We've talked, they're both Christians, and they're both coming to, you know, we were all agreeing that this could be it. Or, you know, maybe we stave off this global tyranny for another couple generations. Nobody knows. But, yeah.
Well, the Bible says only the Father knows, not even Jesus, not even the angels. Only one God knows. So if it's going to be tomorrow, if it's going to be another generation, we don't know. But the Bible also says, beware of the signs. You know, rumors of wars, wars and rumors of wars, and it just goes through a whole bunch of things. Now, granted, that has happened throughout millennia, and people have said many times, the end is near, the end is near, Jesus is coming. But in my view, this is the only time in history that the technology has existed to carry out that final plan. Something from the Bible, a passage, and I'm not a Bible expert by any means, comes and says, the beast image will be seen around the world simultaneously, right? Even when I read that in the 80s, I was like, how's that going to happen? Now everybody's got a smartphone. Everybody's connected to a television. Heck, give them a few more years and then they'll all be connected through the new
Starlink.
The Neuralink. And then had a whole discussion about that. That's transhumanism. Maybe we'll probably hit a little bit of that before the discussion is over. But now we have the technology to where instantly, especially with the centralization of communications, you can have one image that will hit every smartphone, every computer, every television, every EAS system in the world simultaneously. So that's another prophecy. Check that off of the prophecy list.
And I just want to add something that came to my mind is, you know, I was looking at lately the other week, Elon Musk with SpaceX is on track to be the ones that have the most satellites up there, you know, we know that they're talking about digital IDs and everyone getting everyone banked and included, right? Mm-hmm. So once you're, and you know, they can't leave us alone, that everyone has to have a digital ID and a smartphone and a digital account, blah, blah, blah. They have to be plugged into the social credit system. So that way they will then be able to exclude you if you don't do what they say. But I think the flip side of it is what you're talking about. That's why we got to have the Starlinks, and Google's got, and Facebook have those internet balloons in Africa that can hook up people in Africa to the, you know, in the rural areas with internet. So whether it's through your phones, 4G or Starlink or whatever. But on the flip side, maybe this is God's purpose as well. It's like, so also everyone can have access to what you're saying to witness, you know, everything, to witness, all the Antichrist stuff, you know, Christ coming back. So it's kind of like double-edged. So we will be plugged into the totalitarian system, but, you know, people can still be reached with the gospel through this same digital system. And it's like getting us ready for the show, right? So everyone can be plugged in. We've all got our internet now. We've all got our smartphones, whatever things come down the line. And then humanity as a whole will be able to see all of these sort of prophetic events, you know, that will, at the end of history, you know, this will be the true end of history.
Well, as we know it, but as with many things, when one door closes, another opens. So this may be the chapter, end of this chapter of this history. So yeah, it's a very interesting time. And the more the time goes on, the more faith I have in the Bible and the prophecies. And also there's other prophecies that have been out there outside of the Christian religion. But these all kind of seem to talk about a similar story as what we're going through here. Now, I've got a few other things on my plate that I want to talk about here. So let me look at my notes. Okay. Here's a couple things. Let's go back. Let's go into the current world right now and talk about some current events that have recently happened. There is kind of an overall theme I want to get to, but right now, the Moscow shooting, right? Was it a false flag? Was it not? Is the first question, because in this day and age, Putin's just as much of a scumbag as the rest of the world leaders. And he has a proven history of doing false flags.
Who you mean this guy?
Yeah, Putin.
My coffee Putin, mug Putin. Right there.
Putin. If not, who is responsible? I mean, they say it's ISIS-K. Anybody with a bit of discernment knows ISIS? Oh, you mean the Israeli Secret Intelligence Services? Was it the Ukraine? Was it the Americans? Or was it just a group of radical Muslims who wanted to take their avenge from Allah by in their picture, raising their left hand. So what's your take on that?
That's the million-dollar question. So I don't know who did it right off the bat. I don't know who it was, but I think one thing I can say for sure, for certain, definitively, that it was a deep event, mm-hmm. deep politics. You know, Peter Dale Scott and others. I've interviewed him. He's in his 90s now. It's a deep event. It was a state terrorism, I think, for sure. You know, there's no way it's just, you know, these random guys. You know, I think according, you know, if you believe the confessions, even they themselves say, you know, it wasn't done for ideology. They were just mercenaries. They were paid to do it. So somebody paid them to do it. So this was some form of state terrorism, in my opinion. But I don't know who did it. It could be the Russians. Doesn't even have to necessarily be Putin. It could be other elements of the Russian, the collective Kremlin, Russian oligarchs. There's that. It could be the West. You know, there are signs. The U.S. embassy alert on March 7th that said to Americans to avoid gatherings in Russia. And that was the last alert until March 22nd when these events happened. Some people say so that this was supposed to happen right soon after March 7th. And it didn't for whatever reason. Maybe it was botched. You saw Victoria Nuland was fired or resigned on March 5th. I listened to an interview last night with Gilbert Doctorow, who I've interviewed. He's based in Brussels. He's the Russia Observer. He said something interesting. He said, it's more likely that Victoria Nuland was fired because the mission that she had supervised to attack Russia with a terrorist attack using Islamic extremists on the 8th of March was no longer operable. He concludes saying the Russians are accusing the U.S. and Great Britain, and that puts us in a situation as critical as we were in the worst days of the Cuban Missile Crisis. And indeed, just so you're having the Russians say it wasn't ISIS and that it was Ukraine involved and the U.S. and U.K., which is strong rhetoric. And so, again, I think it was some type of deep event. And it'd be difficult to think it's a Russian false flag if they're now saying it was the West, because usually the Russians don't talk like that. So in any case, what is the, well, we'll have to see what the consequence is. For me, it seems like it is an escalation. Mm-hmm. It's an escalation towards, you put together other stuff. You know, it just seems for the past so many years, the West has been trying. It's like someone's trying to bring about a third world war. And so this would fit into that trend. You know, I listened earlier this week in Croatian, one of my favorite Croatian intellectuals was an admiral who fought in the war. He came out and said, because I've been on TNT and geopolitics, I've been saying for many months now, you're seeing the trend where countries are now saying we need to bring back conscription. Croatia, Serbia, Germany, Baltic countries now. Again, why are they going to bring back conscription? Because they're planning for a war. And so the admiral said this week in an interview in Croatian, saying that exactly that. Like what I've been saying, he said that the West wants to do is basically take Europe and throw it at Russia. It's like they want another war. And so they want Europe to go to war with Russia. And it just seems like we're on trend for that. The train is moving in that direction.
I agree fully. I think that it's being set up on multiple fronts. You have the Ukraine situation. You have the Russia situation. You have the Israel-Hamas situation, which goes a lot to the Bible, Nostradamus and other things. Then you have the back burner of the China situation. And I think that the globalists, the people who are really planning it, is not Klaus Schwab. So we don't really even know who they are or who their names are. We can only see the manifestation of their plans. And I think that this is just part of their planning and their agenda. And by throwing in that attack on Moscow, that's just one more straw that's laid down on the camel's back. Now, that may be the straw that breaks the camel's back. We'll have to see what Russia's response is to this. And that's going to be very telling. Because if Russia and Putin do take the gloves off, they're like, fine, we're done pussyfooting around, guys. You want a war? We're going to give you a war. First thing we're going to do is we're going to go in and we're going to take Crimea. I mean, not Crimea, sorry. We're going to take Ukraine and we're going to do a full force. And as soon as that happens, I believe France has put some troops into Ukraine. So that is a direct conflict with NATO. If Europeans and especially American troops are directly attacked from Russia, then that gives the West justification to do a retaliation strike. And once that happens, once the two meet face to face, then Katie, bar the door. You're going to have to conscribe every little snowflake you can, teach little Billy, who thinks he's Sally, that Billy, guess what? Here's a gun. We're going to teach you how to use it, and you have no choice. And I can see the conscription being happening across the globe. And with the additional straw, if you will, I compare it to a spoke in a greater wheel. When Israel lights off, now you're going to have the Muslim world going with the West. We in the West are, in my opinion, as a former vet, well, current vet, but a veteran, is we are strung out so thin, that we have just essentially become a paper tiger. And once the Middle East lights off, that falls right back into revelations. You have Russia coming in, then you're going to have China coming in. And it reminds me of a prophecy from Nostradamus that I learned about in the 80s when I was a senior in high school. So 84 time period, 84. And he's talking about the end of the world. And he had an interesting statement. He says, Russia and America will maybe not ally, but the bear and the lion will lie together. Then that's going to cease to exist. And Russia and China are going to ally against a direct conflict of the West, United States and Europe. And that's how he described World War III. And that really kind of falls into it, because in the 90s, up until fairly recently, right, we were establishing good relationships with Russia. China's always been a contentious issue. So it's like, oh, okay, well, it looks like we're getting together. In fact, there was a point in time that Russia was talking about entering NATO and doing something like that. Now, well, we're in a situation where we can come in direct conflict. Well, we're going to come into direct conflict. When it happens, I don't know, but they're setting the scenes. And once that happens, Russia and China are going to ally. They're going to have the Middle East. And then it's just going to be the West, Europe against that. And all the players are going to be at the table. And my fear, and just call it a fear, because I don't know what's going to happen, is that's when we're going to see World War III. And it is going to be a war that humanity cannot even conceive the amount of brutality and destruction. Here's another point that I thought about. We as Americans have a big sense of hubris when it comes to war, because we've never been attacked, right? I mean, we did with England, but that was past in history. But in modern times, we've been isolated. So our wars for the citizens here have been very disconnected. It happens overseas. Well, technology has changed, people. And now, if it breaks out, when it breaks out, we are going to be directly attacked, because we have hypersonic missiles, we have rods of God, we have space technology. So the fact that we've been separated by a vast ocean is a non sequitur. And I hope to God what I see doesn't happen. Like I said earlier, I hope I can look back and say, Dave, you are one moron. How could you even think that stuff was happening? And I just hope it doesn't. But I want to bring it back. You brought up a good point earlier, and this goes back to a little bit of history, the occult, and to Hitler and the Nazis. You said that they were very heavily involved in the occult, which is true. Himmler was very involved with it. They're involved with the Thule Society, or Thule, depending on how you pronounce it, and the Viril Society. And also Blavatsky. It's funny how the occult, when you study the history, you see common threads between different beliefs or secret societies. And even to this day, the occult plays a very important role in what's happening. Whether one believes that demons exist, the people who are at the top of the food chain, the top of the pyramid, the capstone, if you will, do believe it. They believe that they're summoning demons. And yes, they do sacrifice children. And that's another thing that people blows people's minds. That can't happen. I'm like, why don't you think it's not going to happen today when sacrificing children has existed for thousands of years in the dark arts? Time to wake up. Now, as far as what's happening in the occult, do you see a connection with the occult, secret societies, Aleister Crowley, what they have said, and what's happening in this current day?
I mean, for me, the occult is just the externalization of you know, Satan and his angels. That's like all of the things that we're talking about. Again, people talk about Bilderberg and who's really running the world, trilateral Bilderbergers, you know, they throw out Jews and all this out there. But again, for me, that's like a moot point. It's Satan's. Lucifer is the one. No one ever talks about him. People tell me, why don't you talk about the Jews? Why don't you talk about that? I'm like, why don't you talk about Lucifer and Satan? You know, it's this fallen, it's him. And he's the general directing all of these lower level hierarchies. And so the Aleister Crowleys, the OTOs, the Masons, all this, they're just basically doing the will of Satan. And, you know, there's a great documentary. I'm a big fan of Joe Schimmel, and there's criticism of him as well, but Good Fight Ministries. And he makes these like many hours documentaries. And he did one recently on the Marvel world. And it just blows your mind how Iron Man, like, and he shows you what the primary source evidence. He's not making any of it up. It just blows your mind how, like, all the whole, you know, the Marvel, a lot of the comic universes are basically, it's occultism.
In what sense?
Literally, like, the writers are, like, theosophists, occultists, Satanists, you know, mm-hmm. DC Comics, Marvel. Iron Man is actually the son of the devil, literally. Like, there's a comic where it says, you know, Iron Man was conceived as part of some Faustian bargain, that Iron Man is literally like Satan. You can see with like Venom and all these different characters. Doctor Strange is modeled on Aleister Crowley, literally. And it's so, you know, it's so insane. But then he explains how Crowley wanted to bring about the end of the world, mm-hmm. the end times. And he mentions, this is like far, I almost threw up when I heard this, that they invert everything, Gnosticism, theosophy, everything inverts, you know. Instead of God being our loving God who created us and Satan the bad guy, no, he's the demiurge, right? He's God is this tyrant and Satan is Prometheus. He's trying to save us, right? It's this complete inversion. Mm-hmm. And Crowley would do communion just like in Christianity, except in Crowley's world, communion was excrement. Like he's literally eating excrement. I'm like, oh my goodness. Like seriously, right? You know, and he's sacrificing people. Like, I think, you know, Crowley was involved with that, which, and so back to my earlier point, he was trying to bring about the end times and he wanted to be like the beast of the end times for the prophecy. And so that didn't happen. And then, in this documentary, they point out how you've got L. Ron Hubbard, I think, of Scientology.
Yes.
Picks up the baton. Mm-hmm. So L. Ron Hubbard wants to then also be like the beast of Revelation. And so these forces are actively trying to bring in the end times. So I don't know if I fully answered your question, but.
Oh, well, you did answer it very well. And you're right, Crowley, you brought up an interesting point. And I was thinking about this the other day. There's a direct connection between Scientology and Aleister Crowley. Because back in the 40s, Aleister Crowley, there was Jack Parsons, who was one of the founder of Jet Propulsion Laboratories and one of the founders of NASA, was a direct follower of Crowley and set up, I believe, North America's first OTO lodge, in the Agape Lodge in Orange County. And L. Ron was Jack Parsons' best friend. And they even, there's a very famous workings that they did, a magical ritual called, what is it? What it is they ushered in the Moon Child, which is the Antichrist. And Crowley even criticized them about it because they said, you did not do that right because you didn't close the portal or something along those lines. And then you have L. Ron, who eventually stole Jack Parsons' money and his wife, went out, wrote the book Dianetics, and started the philosophy of Scientology. And according to L. Ron's own son, said Scientology is nothing but a magical working performed over time. And when you look at L. Ron, how was he able to do such great things with people? Now, I want to make a differentiation for all the listeners out there. Just because somebody is a great person does not mean they're a good person. In fact, many times, in order to do great things, you have to do very bad things. So how did L. Ron go out and start this big organization called Scientology? Maybe he really learned a few things from Aleister Crowley and black magic, considering, according, I think Parsons or Crowley said that L. Ron was a natural adept at ceremonial magic. So, sorry, I'm just adjusting my earpiece right here. Everybody out there, I got a new set of in-ears here, and I'm still trying to figure them out. So back to the occult, to Parsons, back to Crowley. Yeah, Crowley even said he called himself the Beast 666. And the sanctum of God was the anus, that he said. So anybody out there says, I'm a member of OTO, you're like, yeah, we know what you've been doing. Not to get crude on that. But I think that there is a spiritual battle between Satan and God. Call him what you will. And it is something that's very important to concentrate on, especially if one wants to figure out what's happening now. But it's so difficult to get people to even understand or accept the secular side when you try to bring in the esoteric side. I find that with your average person, it's a little bit much, although it's very important. What do you think on that?
Yeah, and you know, that's why, for example, in 2008-09, I was doing my master's in Geneva, Switzerland, at the Geneva School of Diplomacy. And, you know, as you mentioned, you know, once you go down this rabbit hole, you learn the lay of the land, right? The Federal Reserve, false flag, 9/11, and the esoteric. And you learn about Lutz's Trust, which was founded in 1922 as Lucifer Publishing, Alice Bailey, and of course her guru was Helena Blavatsky, as you've been mentioning. Blavatsky in the 1800s had a magazine called Lucifer. Bailey, again, founded Lucifer Publishing. They got three offices, New York, London, Geneva. And right down the street from my school was the original League of Nations building in Geneva, which is now the UN Geneva building. And right across the plaza from UN Geneva is this, you know, conference building where, you know, conferences are held by many different institutions. But in that conference hall building is the offices of Lutz's Trust. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they hold events. And so I went to, in 2009, I went to Lutz's Trust, Lucifer Publishing meeting. And it was like mostly elder, you know, middle-aged to elderly folks. And I went to it. I've got somewhere in my boxes here, a stack of documents, the actual 2009 doc handout that they gave to me. It's like a pamphlet. And it talks about Prometheus. And, you know, I think that also says Lucifer. And basically, you know, you go on their own website and they say Lucifer is the Christ. They believe that Lucifer is the Messiah, that he's the Christ. They say that all these UN conferences, World Economic Forum conferences, are preparations, are to prepare for the coming of Lucifer. and that Lucifer is the Christ for the Christians. He's the Maitreya for the Eastern mystics. He's the Mahdi for the Muslims. So he's basically, from the Christian worldview, he's the Antichrist figure. And they're saying that he's here. And so, you know, what I tried to do, I go to the meeting, I got the pamphlet, so then I can talk about this with people, not as some crazy conspiracy theorist. It's like, look, it says I went to their meeting. They exist. Like, this is what they believe. Go to their website. They're a UN NGO, you know? And they say that Lucifer is the Christ. That's kind of been my approach, to always approach everything in an academic fashion. And more these days, it's like you don't even have to try anymore. Like, every day you're looking at mainstream news articles. You know, last week, New Scientist magazine is promoting cannibalism. Like, they're trying to paint cannibalism in a, like, it's literally Soylent Green. It's like, back in maybe in the early 2000s, it was, you know, some forum, some chat forum on the website, you know, that were talking about this stuff. And it's like, literally, The Guardian, the New Scientist magazine, is talking about eating people and eating bugs. And it's just like, you don't even have to try anymore. And these are all mainstream academic sources, because as we get closer to this stuff, you know, the mask has to come off. As they establish world government, they can do it from behind the scenes for a while. But, you know, at some point, you know, the mask has to come off, and it's going to be like, okay, everybody, it's time, you know, you're in world government now.
Well, it reminds me of something. There's a gentleman called Larry Nichols. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but he was a Clinton insider that became a whistleblower in the 90s. And I was listening, actually watching an interview with Alex Jones a long, long time ago. And his gruff voice is, you want to know the good news, Alex? They're lying to you. That's good news. That means they haven't gotten their plans together. So they got to lie. He says, when you got to worry is when they tell you the truth. And now they're starting to tell us the truth, the revelation of the method. All you have to do is go to the World Economic Forum, and they're telling you exactly what they want to do, and they're going to do, at least in their plans. You will own nothing and be happy. You will eat Z-bugs. You will live in 15-minute cities. We will have complete surveillance. And according to Harari, I think that's how you say his name,
Harari.
Yeah, I always mess his name up. I guess it's probably just a mental block or something there. Harari. How you say it again, please?
Harari, Yuval Harari.
Harari. Okay. Harari. Animal or humans are now hackable beings. And when you think about how technology has advanced, especially when you, here's a small example, voice-to-skull technology. First time it was introduced was back in the first Iraq War, when we were about to get into battle with Saddam's Revolutionary Guard, his best of the best. And when we approached them, they came out of their bunkers with their hands up and white flags. And when they were interrogated, why did you give up and why did you give up so easily? Their response, the soldier's response, was, Allah told us to. And that, if you know how to read the fine print and read between the lines, was voice-to-skull technology. It was new weapons. So they literally did hear Allah in his voice in everybody's head. There was no sound outside telling them to give up. That technology is old. When you get into the Schumer resonance and you get into Schumer technology, our brains operate at about 7.5 hertz in that range, and they're able to take electromagnetic frequencies matched at that frequency and target that into our brain. So you hear about targeted individuals, right? They're hearing things. Everybody thinks I'm crazy. Well, no, you're not crazy. They're just using advanced technology on you. And I kind of lost my train of thought.
Well, I had a train of thought here. I don't talk about this much, but, you know, one theory I keep on my mental bookshelf, I don't talk as much, but, you know, I think it's plausible that, you know, I think some of these wars that we know were for no apparent reason carried out, you know, the Iraq war, right? Mm-hmm. Saddam didn't have WMDs, none of that. They just, okay, well, let's go to war in Iraq. And I think part of it is there's a lot of, you know, resources, denial of resources, you know, capture of resources, denial of resources, and testing new weapons. I think, you know, look at Vietnam, Operation Phoenix, Doug Valentine, who I've interviewed, says Operation Phoenix, which was the CIA assassination police state program that killed 25,000 plus Vietnamese, that was brought back to America as Department of Homeland Security now. And then, you know, the first cloud seeding was carried out, geoengineering was carried out during Vietnam War, right?
Operation Popeye, so, I believe.
I don't remember the name, but so you see all this stuff, what you're talking about in Iraq, it's almost as if they're carrying these wars out to develop this new tech. And I think about like nuclear weapons, for example, and the things that they're developing. And then they're talking about this alien threat in the future, and that, you know, maybe they're going to try to fight. I got this crazy conspiracy theory. It's, you know, I've got many, right? As we all do.
So do I.
What if, you know, Satan is this, you know, got so much hubris, or, you know, this insane where he's going to try to like nuke Christ at the second coming, you know, in his mind, like he's going to try everything he can. I don't think it will work at all, but I could just imagine, because, you know, they talk about this alien threat, and, you know, what if it's the second coming Christ and his angels, and then he's going to try to like nuke or use these lasers or space-based weapons to try to defend himself from Jesus, or, you know, it's just kind of, you think how they start these wars just to develop some of this technology, which then they will use for different purposes down the line. And often they're used to control our own nations, like America, but I think for global control, right? So you've got the GPS that was developed and the internet. A lot of people now, Dr. Mercola and others, are saying, and I believe this, you know, that the internet from the beginning, I think it's naive to think that, oh, they just created, you know, DARPA, the internet, and it's to help humanity. No, I think from its inception, its purpose was to create a worldwide web to control everyone, the internet. That's what I and some other people think.
Well, whether it was initially created to do that or not, the end game is the same. It will be used to control everybody. Least no man shall buy nor sell, least he have the mark of the beast. And with digital technology, CBDCs, which is something that very much concerns me, this fulfills the prophecy. And then throw into the fact of transhumanism and things like digital tattoos, microchips, nanotechnology, that it's my belief that there is the potential with nanotechnology that you won't even have to take the mark of the beast, right? You'll just breathe in some nano dust, and it's made of self-assembling robots, and they self-assemble and they build a neural network. I'm not saying that exists today, but I can see the potential of that. I can also see the potential, excuse me, of transhumanism, that if our society exists to progress to a decent level, that when a baby is born, the neural network, the nanotechnology, will be in vitro or in utero. It's not in vitro, in utero, one of the two. So as soon as that zygote gets formed, right, along with that, you're going to have nanotechnology forming. So as the baby's born, this neural network will be built right alongside with the nervous system. And there will be no way of separating that. And as soon as the baby comes out, boop, he gets slapped on the ass and he is connected to the internet. And we now have the Borg Society mixed with a little bit of 1984 and some Brave New World. They're already talking about basically creating babies in pods now. They had that mock commercial that made it seem so nice, because no longer do you have to have childbirth. There's no birth pains. And two, you can have your baby in your living room and you watch it grow in the pod. And then two, you can all just in any time look on your smartphone, look at your app and look at your little baby. And then you can give it little tickles in the thing. Isn't that great, people? Oh, life will be so much better. It's the beautiful side of evil. That's the way they always portray evil, is they always show you the beautiful side to get you hooked. But I can see that coming down the road. And another thing that's always questioned me, now I've got some million things going through my brain, is in the Bible, there's a passage, if you will, that says towards the end times when everything's dust, right? There, it says that there men will cry for death, but death shall not come. And I can completely see that being hooked up with the transhumanism. If they're able to transfer and do what Ray Kurzweil wants to do, which is living, transferring your conscious into the computer. What better analogy to that prophecy than them succeeding and your consciousness in the computer? And guess what? You're not going to die. You're not, you're going to cry for death, but it's not going to come. And you will be living in a complete inconceivable hell in that computer. Just some crazy thoughts that pop into my brain so much of the time. Am I off base? Can you see the potential with technology, nanotechnology, and transhumans where a scenario like that could be possible in the future?
There's a number of things here. Like, I don't think they can ever touch our souls or consciousness. I don't think there's any technology or, you know, technology science that can in any conceivable way get to our soul. I think like God is the only one that has access to our soul. So I don't think we'll be able to like Lawnmower Man or the, you know, live in transfer our consciousness. Maybe what I think I can see, what you describe, is some sort of Frankenstein future. You know, I've interviewed Joe Allen of Steve Bannon's War Room. He's got a great book, Dark Eon, on transhumanism, and he calls it idiocracy merged with algocracy. So it'll be like, it's not going to be some like amazing singularity. It's going to be like some sort of techno hell where, you know, maybe they'll extend your life or you'll be plugged in. And it's gonna become Frankenstein's type stuff. Like you're gonna be deformed and in pain and all, you know. So I could see that type of scenario. But then going back to Mark of the Beast, my view is that it's always a spiritual individual choice, the Mark of the Beast. I don't think it's like gonna be ever something where you are unknowingly, you know. But it's I think the whole point of the Mark of the Beast is it's this conscious decision that you're forced to make. And I think it's something that's generally existed throughout history. And a lot of these things are recurring. I've had this discussion with people in my podcast where, you know, this Antichrist system, it's like a crescendo, a wave. So these same principles, the same things that we're going through, it's been constantly going throughout humanity. Satan has been constantly attempting to control the world. And is what you mentioned earlier, technology is the game changer. So, you know, you'd have the Babylonian Empire, you know, Nimrod, Tower of Babel, that collapses. He comes back, you know, second time, third time, you know, Babylonian Empire, even bigger. He has greater success, but that collapses. Then the Roman Empire. Then you study under the Roman Empire. They had sort of kind of like certificates like we did with the vaccine. I was studying this during the COVID, where they you were forced to sacrifice animals to pagan gods and have like a certificate that you did that. And then if you didn't, you could like fined or jailed or killed, you know. It's kind of like the COVID pass, you know. And so these things have always been with us throughout history. You know, the Holy Roman Empire, I lost the primary source quote, but I had it in the bookmark somewhere. It was digital copy of a primary source in the Middle Ages, 1,000 years ago, where it literally said the Holy Roman Empire, the Catholic Church said, if you don't believe what we do, you cannot buy or sell. So, you know, it's, I think it's always a decision where you're given that choice. And so for me, Mark of the only thing will be that, you know, towards the end of history, it's going to be more total in scope. It's going to be more global, more fully implemented than any time in before history. And I could, you know, when I'm seeing them now develop these palm payment systems or pay with your face, again, mark on the right hand or forehead, it doesn't even have to be an implant, you know. So again, my point is Mark of the Beast has generally existed throughout history. It's the government, you know, it's the totalitarian government saying do this or die. And you have that choice, like Dietrich Bonhoeffer in Germany saying, okay, I'll do what you say and I can live, but you've now renounced Christ, right? Or saying, no, I reject the mark of the beast. And then, you know, he was hanged by the Nazi regime. And so I think, you know, I could see a point where they develop this technocracy, social credit system, no more cash exists. And you pay with your face or your palm, but only if you're a good citizen. Only if you accept the spiritual mark, the ideological mark, right? You accept transgenderism, the climate agenda, you mask up, you vax up. Then, you know, you go buy your groceries, you pay with your face, you get a green light. But if you, you know, don't buy into the system, you go to pay with your face or your palm and it says, you know, the clerk or the there's not going to be clerks, right? It's going to be self-checkout. You're going to say, sorry, payment not accepted. You know, so you don't even need some sort of implant. And so, you know, that would even be for me the mark of the beast. You've made the decision saying, no, I'm not going to accept these crazy ideas. Well, then, sorry, you can't use your palm to buy food anymore.
But doesn't the Bible say that that's the one thing that you can lose your salvation for? Pretty much it's very forgiving. But once you take the mark of the beast, you can no longer enter into heaven.
But for me, it's the same thing. It's like when Daniel was told to bow down, he didn't, you know? Right. And so, and it says, if you don't take the mark of the beast in this world, you'll be killed. And so how many times have we seen throughout history where, you know, he's told to bow to a false God, and if you don't, you're going to be killed if you don't take the mark of the beast. But again, what's the flip side? If he does, so he wants to save his life, and by bowing down to this false God, he's saying, I renounce Christ. Mm-hmm. So by doing that, then he goes to hell, right? He goes to hell because he's just said, you know, rejected Christ just to, you know, to live another day.
That's an interesting viewpoint. I've never really looked at that. I'll have to ponder on that a while.
For me, it's a more sort of universal explanation because, you know, I think the, because it's something that Christians throughout history can have, I think, lived through. So I don't think necessarily the mark is something reserved solely for the end of days, although I think it will have its fullest expression. Okay. You know, and it's as you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah, I was playing devil's advocate on that one because the one thing that, from what I understand, is that you have to make a conscious decision to worship the system of the beast. And once you do, you're done. And I could see in other terms, if I want to really go out there, so let me just go into speculation land for a little bit, with what we've seen in COVID. With nanotechnology and mRNA technology and DNA technology, that they can now print DNA. Okay. So you take, say, the COVID shot. Well, guess what? Your genetics have now changed. Are you still fully human or are you not? Are you getting into Nephilim and Anunnaki territory? And we know how God judged the Nephilim and the Anunnaki, basically flooded the world. He don't like those buggers. And then another thing, let's bring this, let's go on another little tangent, if you don't mind. So we're talking about nanotechnology, genetic modification. Let's go back in the second world for a minute. This is an interesting point that I've thought about and I've heard other people talk about. This is a legal aspect. What amount of deviation from human DNA does it take to make you not human? And once you are not human, then you do not have human rights. You are the same rights as a tomato, a modified cow. And under legal stature, who owns your new genetic material? Is it a Monsanto? Case in point, we've seen many cases of genetic modification in crops. You have an organic farmer whose crop gets contaminated by Monsanto, and Monsanto comes in and says, You have X amount of our modified DNA inside your field. Therefore, you are in violation of trademarks and we own your field now. So, farmer, let's do some negotiations because your crop's now ours. I could see that being applied to the human race. All right, nature boy, you took the shot. Well, you're X amount of deviations away. And because of the genetic markers that you have in your body, which is owned by, hypothetically, Pfizer, you are now property of Pfizer under legal stature. And there's nothing you can do about it. Do you see something like that possibly playing out in the future?
I mean, it's very logical. I've seen people, you know, we've all thought about this. I think Catherine Austin Fitz, others have mentioned it. And it makes perfect sense. You know, I've studied the GMO stuff, also how it operates under NAFTA, right? Everything that you just said, you know, Jeffrey Smith, he's one of the top guys on that. William Engdahl, who I've interviewed, he's got a great book, Seeds of Destruction. I think his book is Seeds of Destruction. You've got Seeds of Deception as well. Think by Jeffrey Smith, and it makes perfect sense. So what they're doing with agriculture, so they've done it already with agriculture, and right. Now they've started that process with humans. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it just makes perfect sense. You're seeing them begin to do with humans what they did with the agriculture. You got tomatoes, so they modified again. You got GMO tomatoes, GMO whatever other crops. And they own that food now. And now it's like Gattaca, you know, the movie with Ethan Hawke and Brad Pitt's ex-wife, what's her, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Ethan Hawke, right? It's a fantastic movie. And it just seems like, I think a lot of these things that we're talking about, they will attempt to do it. The question is with how much success. You know, last night I loved one of the ways that my guest Alex Newman ended the podcast, where he said, we talked about the book of Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar's dream, where he dreams this giant figure, which basically it's a symbol of the prophecy till the end of time, where you got the world empires and the final world empire, the Roman Empire, the two legs, the 10 toes, which are made of iron and clay. And he Alex Newman points out that a rock comes out of nowhere and smashes the statue, and it's basically, you know, Jesus, God, and you know, as the thing culminates, God just, you know, destroys the whole thing. And so Mike, you know, their plans, I just don't know how far they're going to get with them. And in the meantime, kind of what you mentioned earlier with Ray Kurzweil, I think it's going to look ugly. I think a lot of their plans will not go the way that they want, and it's going to end up being like real Frankenstein type stuff, you know, like the video game BioShock, which I'm a big fan of. It's just going to be Frankenstein type stuff. Yeah.
I could see that. Once you start messing around with God's creation DNA, you're asking for trouble. You're just asking for trouble. And there's been so many cases when, you know, you mess around with one gene and it causes all these other unexpected genes to go off. And next thing you know, you have these massive birth defects.
You get the blue screen of death. It, like, you know, Microsoft, yeah. You mess around with your stuff on your Microsoft operating system, you get blue screen of death. So it's going to be the same thing with humans.
Yeah. Yeah. I could definitely see something like that happening. But I mean, what are the solutions? Now, we've talked about a lot of downer stuff, right? But it's reality. Reality is crazy. What are some solutions that we can do right now to prepare for this, to possibly even survive, or at least in the short term?
Yeah, you know, I asked myself, I guess, this same thing. And, you know, for me, it's spiritual, right? Getting right with God. And then, you know, really, I'm not afraid of anything else. You know, even if I die, that's the ultimate solution. We're all going to die. So even when you talk about, even if you survive, you know, you're still going to die at age 70, 80, 90, 100. What's your plan for that? You know, even if you survive globalism into your ripe old age, you're still going to die. So, you know, for me, Jesus is the first and biggest answer. after that, having a good social real world network, you know, two networks, the digital virtual network, like you and I are doing right now. And the, you know, we met in person at, in Acapulco. So, you know, having a physical, one of my listeners tells me he's going to be passing through town this weekend. So I'm going to be meeting him. It was funny. Nice. And so having your local network, I think, is the most important because, you know, just look throughout history. This whole bunker thing doesn't work. You know, I can build a bunker in rural Mexico and I could have 100 cartel members descend. You know, even if I have a few of my neighbors with guns, I mean, they want to get you, they're going to get you. So the whole bunker thing is just not going to work. And you don't even have to have a lot of money. You know, you look at the Christians in the first century who didn't have anything. They came together and they survived as a group and they would flee as a group. Or in the Middle Ages, I wrote papers on like the Waldensians, you know, these French Christians or German Christians or whatever, who just wanted to read the Bible without having the Pope tell them what to do. And they'd have to like flee into the forests and stuff. And so the best way to survive is to have an extended network, friends, family, neighbors across town to different towns, different states. I think that that's more important than having, you know, gear, because we're all going to help each other with our different skills. And maybe some people have more money, others don't. Some people have more land or more homes, and we can all help each other. That's number one. And then, you know, doing what you can. I always go back to what one of my guests said, Teddy Roosevelt said. I interviewed Ricardo Bossi in 2020, a former Australian Special Forces, Australia One Party. He said, he quoted Teddy Roosevelt, do what you can with what you got where you're at. So, you know, I wouldn't even fret about worrying about trying to get money to add some other thing to your survival project. Just have a network, stay sane, stay balanced. Right. Look at this stuff, but also hang out, have friends, you know, read literature, arts, play some musical instruments, you know, go out in nature. So have a balance. Don't go crazy and prep reasonably, you know, have as much food as you can and non-perishable products that you use for, you know, as much as you can comfortably 6 months, a year, 2 years. I did a great interview on TNT with Canadian survivalist Stefan Verstappen, who had really good advice. I think he's doing it right. He's got a local community, and they've got medics, they've got farmers, they've got security stuff. They meet every once in a while. You know, no cell phones, no name to the group, no online forum. So it's all really local. And then, you know, like I interviewed Ron Paul. He said, we have to keep pamphleteering, just speaking the truth, pamphleteering. And again, just trying to resist tyranny wherever you can. I think it's most important. And doing it in whichever way you can. You know, my thing is just the podcast. It just happens to be my thing at the moment is that my podcast is my way of doing it. Other people maybe have other outlets or ways of making a difference.
Yeah, I think that we all have to be individual spokes in a much greater wheel, if you will. And we all have our special talents and we all have our special places. Not everybody can be an activist. Not everybody can be an agrarian, right? Not everybody can be a podcaster. But we all have our special roles. And I think that you really brought up a good point. Is building community. And that's the one thing down in Anarcopoco that was one of the paramount themes was building community, local community. And I think that that's very important because one person cannot survive by themselves. It takes multiple people. And you mentioned, I always get Stefan V, I'll just call him that. I've heard him many times on Freeman, and he has a really good plan. He also has something that I believe he said that it's a check-in type of a thing where you'll call somebody at a specific time and they pick up the phone that says, yeah, all right, that's all you need to do. But if they don't pick up the phone, then you call them at a specific interval. And if that doesn't happen, then that's a signal that there's something going wrong at their house and you need to rally. So he came up with a lot of good methods. The method of going gray, you know, not standing out in the crowd, just kind of blending in so you don't become a target. I like what you said, you know, they have people that are medics, they have people that are cooks, they have people that are armors and things like that. So I think that, yeah, if and when it comes down, I do think it's going to come down to having a good network, you know. I think that having a local network is going to be much more important than having a digital network, because at any time they could cut the knees off of us. They could bring the internet down, or they could just say, Nature Boy, well, you don't meet the community guidelines, so we're erasing your online presence. So email, gone. Social media, gone. Rumble account, gone. You will cease to exist. I think Freeman said it best, if you're not in the feed, you do not exist. So I definitely think, and then I believe in becoming prepared. I think it's just an important thing for just having for an emergency basis, having enough food and water, especially getting water filters, you know, a good Berkey, a good Purepur or Life Straw to have around is very important, because one of the most important things for survival is potable water. And if you have that, and you can even take pond water, mud puddles, and run it through the filters and get potable water out of it. But having at least food for at least 30 days. So if the power goes out in an emergency, right? Boom. We have no power. The grocery stores are down. At least have the ability to maintain your life for 30 days, because services may come back up online. I agree. I think there's a lot of things that we've talked about that I agree. It's kind of like, I don't know, talking to a brother from another mother, if you will.
Yeah, and I would just add, you know, it was funny. I was in Costco today, and I hate going to these big box stores, and I don't even I use someone else's membership, and I haven't gone in years, and it's like every single, I hate going because it's so packed, and I literally pick. Like every time I go, it's like literally the worst day to go, where it's just so insanely packed. And I bought a bunch of non-perishables. You know, when COVID happened, like in 2020, I came back and I bought like, so I wouldn't have to be forced to wear the mask more than like once. And they were shouting at me because I had it under my nose. I had it on my chin. And I actually had, like, in 2020, one of the Costco guys try to intimidate me. And I bought up, like, in 2020, you know, toilet, like, three packs of toilet papers and the Kleenexes and then paper towel, all the, you know, dishwashing soap that I, you know, it took me through like 2023, you know, and I didn't have to go to Costco, you know, to buy that stuff for years.
Right.
So I did that again today because I pretty much, my inventory was so now I'm good for a couple of years when it comes to some of these non-perishables. You save money, inflation, saving money. I'm saving money, time and energy from going, having to go constantly, right? To the shop. But I also, just going back to your other point, what the digital and the local network, I think they're very useful as well, because, you know, I'm some of my listeners pass through town, or I'm in a town where I have listeners, and we end up meeting in different countries, and I have places to go to. Like you know, people have said you can stay with me. And there's like, so if I have to leave Mexico, then there's so many places that I could abscond to in Latin America, in the U.S., in Europe, in parts of Asia. So that's kind of cool as well, where, you know, developing these relationships. Where if I have to disappear, there are many places that I can go to.
Wow, that's a nice luxury to have. I quite don't have as many as you do. But then again, I don't have as many listeners as you. maybe one day. Well, Avari, I think that we are coming on in almost an hour and a half, and I can't believe how fast this conversation has gone by. I've found that a good conversation takes a life of its own, and you get sucked into a time warp. So, and I really appreciate your time. I really really enjoyed meeting you at Max's bar and getting to know you, because I mean, when you meet in person, it changes relationships. I mean, you could know somebody online, but you can't ever have or know them like you can in person. And it'll be a fond memory that night we were sitting up there with Brad from Five Time August on that little table right by the bar. I was drinking probably a couple more margaritas than I should have, and just having the lifetime. To me, a Narco Poco was a game changer. It was the first time I was down there, and I plan on going back there next year if I could. I want to actually volunteer and help out because I think it was great. Anybody out there, if you can afford to go down there, right, I highly recommend it. If you opportunities opened up to me that I didn't even know existed. And that's something Charlie Robinson said to me before I left. He said that exact same thing. He says, opportunities are going to open up to you that you don't even know exist. And dead balls on. We got to know each other. Hell, I sat down and was on Patrick Henningsen's podcast with Max.
I watched that. That was fun.
That was fun. And I mean, I was sitting there waiting to go on. I was going to do the slot after Max. And he brought Max up and he looked at me and says, you want to go on with Max? And I'm like, Yeah. You know, I'm trying to stay cool on there, but that little kid inside of me is like, is this real? Is this like really happening? I'm on a podcast with Patrick Henningsen and Max Egan. Oh my God. And that was just one of the many, many magical and surreal things we had there. So anybody out there, if you can go down to 2015, go down there. It is a game changer. And you'll meet people like my guest here, and you'll meet people like Max Egan, and you'll meet people like Patrick Henningsen, and you'll meet people like Flat Earth Dave, Steve Faulkner. The names go on and on and on. But with that, I know you've recently departed from TNT Radio. You had yourself a good run there, but I think that you needed to close that chapter and open up another one in your life. So where can all of my listeners find you? Pimp out your stuff, my friend.
Yeah, just geopoliticsandempire.com. And then from there, you'll find links to my Substack, which for now is one of my primary ways to support me. You know, become a $5 a month paid subscriber. And then, you know, this week and next, I'm doing Zoom calls just with paid subscribers where, you know, for an hour a week, whoever wants to join, if they got the time, you know, we just talk about like this, kind of like what's happening in the world. So, you know, geopoliticsandempire.com. I'm active on my Twitter, on the Telegram. And, you know, I'm on many video platforms. There's the Locals, Rockfin, Subscribestar. People can pay, like, to do if they want to chat with me, like a consultation about it. You know, I've got 3 passports. I've lived in half a dozen countries. You know, if they want to expatriate, they want to talk about the meaning of life, the end of the world, geopolitics, whatever, that also helps to support me. And so I'll be opening up a merchandise store soon, hopefully. And yeah, I loved my run at TNT. I loved TNT. It was just so much fun. I was very content with the pay, talking to so many people 2 years, but really I just got, you know, they might see me appear, you know, during those last 2 years on my TNT show and on my podcast. And, you know, I appear like everything is well. You don't see it, but really behind the scenes, it's an insane amount of work.
Yeah, it is.
Booking guests, researching new guests, bringing back old guests, prepping the show, doing the show without a break, you know, every day live. You know, I went to Croatia for 3 months in 2022 to go back home and I had to do my show from 1 to 4 in the morning for 3 months. You know, then when I'm traveling to the U.S., I still have to do my show in between, you know, and traveling around Mexico. And it's just like, I need a freaking break. And so, you know, I like to say, I'd be happy to be a TNT highway man again, but someday maybe more part time. But I really want to see if I can make a living from geopolitics and empire. That's my mission the next year. Or two. So we'll see what happens.
Well, everybody out there, go out there, check them out, support them, support independent media, because if you listen to them, kick them a little bit, tell them you said hi. We all like comments, by the way. If you don't have any money, spread the show. Leave us a comment. Me personally, let me know if you like it. Hate listeners, send me a comment and tell me I suck. I need to get off the air. Just spell my name right. That's all. All right. Well, I want to thank you. Now, where I can be found is I have my Rumble channel, and it's Naughty by Nature with Nature Boy. Naughty is spelled N-A-U-T-I as in nautical. Anybody that knows me knows that's very apropos for who I am. I'm a water baby, water child, I should say. I can also be found every Friday night at 11 p.m. Eastern on the TNP, the New Prisoners Rumble channel. We have an encore presentation. My audio podcast can be found where any podcasts are available. And that's one thing I'm really wanting to push for everybody out there is please subscribe to my audio podcast. You'll get a much better quality of sound because I'm an audio guy, not a video guy, as you could probably tell. And it is free. You can listen to it anytime. You don't have to watch it. And the most important thing about RSS feeds is they're very difficult to cancel. If my provider says, Dave, we don't like you anymore, I'll be like, okay, I'll go out there and set up my own server and I'll set up my own RSS feed and it'll still get out there. So subscribe to my audio podcast. And I just got picked up also on my audio side with freeworld.fm. And that show broadcasts every Tuesday from 3 to 5 p.m. I'm on Twitter. My handle is NatureBoyNBN. That's NatureBoyNBN as in Nazi by Nature. I hope to be getting a Telegram channel and doing the work that it takes to do a successful podcast. Because you just hit it right on the head. The amount of time that it takes, even for me doing one show a week with one guest, is pretty immense. It takes most of my free time doing it full time. I've done it, Havari. I was working with TNT for a week, booking for Chuck O'Chelly, and that was just insane. They wanted first two guests and then three guests. And the one thing I can, and that was just a little bit too much, and that was just booking guests. That wasn't producing the show. That wasn't doing the show. That wasn't hosting. That wasn't doing the Twitter work, doing the Telegram work, and doing the marketing. So I can completely understand why you need a break, my friend. It's a hell of a job, and it's a lot of things that off stage people don't see. They only see the on stage and don't have a conception of how much work it takes to put on a successful show like you've done for years and you continue to do. I really respect your opinions on geopolitics. I think you're very fair and balanced. I think you're intelligent. I think you bring up good subjects and you have excellent guests. So with that being said, I want to thank you for coming on my show and having me on your show. That was quite the treat. When you said you want to be on my show, I'm like, oh, someone wants to hear what I have to say. Sure. You know, it's that little kid inside of me that I try to keep hidden on air. So with everybody, thank you for tuning in. Leave me a comment. Love me or hate me. It is who I am. I'm going to keep doing this. I'm on a constant quest for improvement. And with that being said, I like to say, y'all have a good day or good evening, depending on where you're listening to, and we'll see you next time.